It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
Well, the evidence that is mounting and what has taken place across our country is beyond anything we've ever seen, certainly in the history of our country. It is the story, and it is this election in 2020. And my fellow Americans, I'll tell you this right up front here. You only know the very, very tip of this catastrophe. If you think you know something, you really don't know anything yet, because there's a lot more to happen here with this story. Believe me, there is. And we've always known this. I've known, and I've said to you repeatedly, you know, wake me up at the end of January and let me know where we're at. Well, what that means is there's going to be a lot to happen in this country between now and the end of January. And I can just about guarantee that. I will tell you that. You know, lots to talk about here. And let me welcome you first to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm, along with Michael Johns. Up front in the program, we had here Sidney Powell on. We talked about the Georgia, the Michigan lawsuits, and Pennsylvania as well, and so many others that we're seeing across our country. In the first hour as well, we spoke with the ground game, the American Mighty Strike Force, and the people that are working in the Trump campaign with the affidavits, gathering all the evidence. And we're talking real life stories here. Right. We're talking people that, you know, this is real life stuff that's been taking place here. Yeah, there's a lot of evidence, Michael. And you've been in the, I know you've been in the throes of this over the past couple of weeks yourself. You and I haven't spoken in several days here, so I'm really anxious to have this conversation with you. But I have to tell you this, Michael. From everything I've seen and everything I've talked to, and all, I have no question or no qualms in my mind right now that this was absolutely a stolen election. And I say that as an American, certainly not a partisan. And I say that as a patriot. And now the job is to show that evidence, uncover it all. And this thing is going to have to make its way up to the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, firstly, kudos to Sidney Powell for her good leadership in taking on what could be the cause of our lifetime, a potentially rigged 2020 presidential election. And if you think back decades ago of just even pondering the possibility that we'd be having this discussion, it would be inconceivable. But we've had such a systematic corruption of our electoral processes and in so many different ways, and we've refused to clean it up. I should say Democrats have refused to clean it up, which has allowed it to go on. First, I think you walked through a series of events. Number one, you and I even have found it very peculiar last sort of early fall when we were getting these routine media articles coming out that not only has there been no notable history of voter fraud in the country, wrong, by the way, entire books written on it, people in jail because of it, large cases. But there would be no fraud in the 2020 election. It was a prospective statement of fact, not an opinion, not their view. We were told that there would be no fraud prospectively months before this election occurred. And of course, our sensible rebuttal, if you go back to what we were saying, you and I were saying in September and October, to our vast and quickly growing audience, was that there's every reason to be concerned about voter fraud, particularly when it relates to mail-in ballots. And this was before we had any recognition of the system problems with Dominion and Smartmatic, which to me are just extraordinarily troubling. Like I have, you know, in a lot of ways lost present tense confidence in this democratic political process of ours until these issues are resolved. So then you go further. So we were told that would never happen. Then we had an election where the allegations of fraud were both credible. They were multi-state. They appeared to be coordinated. And the individuals, many of whom arose to sign affidavits within days of the election. And of course, then again, media, including social media, closing out as they did the Hunter Biden story before the election, which would have been meaningful for voters to know about, any reference to it. These arbiters of facts had determined that these individuals who have signed under a penalty of perjury and misrepresentation of fact were not being straightforward. I'm sure they haven't to this date read those affidavits. So there's been a culture of almost autocratic silence designed both to firstly silence anyone bold enough to suggest what appears to be a growing bundle of evidence that this had occurred, and then secondly to discourage the more timid who think there is to just be quiet about it. That's the way dictatorships function. It's not just in what they do to those who are bold, but what they do in the way of silencing the less bold, the quiet censorship of those who are just say, I'll just sort of stay away from this. Can you think of any bigger issue that we're confronting? Then you go forward. So we're silenced on that. Then we're sort of surrounded with 2 weeks of media coverage that where every reference to voter fraud in just about every mainstream media outlet, wire service coverage, Reuters, Associated Press, New York Times, Washington Post, arguably the two most mainstream and influential newspapers in our country, and in broadcast media, just about every outlet except for OWN and Newsmax, who have taken these allegations to their credit very seriously, saying that they would always have some condemnation-oriented adjective in front of it. It would be baseless allegations, irresponsible allegations, unproven allegations. And then they went further, even saying that was threatening to our democratic political process.
Right.
So that takes you up to about Thanksgiving. That takes you up to about a few days ago. And so all of these allegations, which in any criminal case, you kind of have evidence that comes together. You might have announcements or you might not have announcements from prosecutors about where they are with it. This has followed that course completely. So they were out there explaining in a broad context, here is what we're going to ultimately present. Yeah. And within a period, Sydney had promised within 2 weeks, which is an extraordinary quick time frame to turn around something of this magnitude, an immensely compelling fact-based complaint in Georgia and Michigan, complete with everything that is evidentiary in nature.
Well, that's it. That's exactly.
It's the lack of accountability. So you have media telling the American voter over and over and over again, there's no evidence, there's no evidence, there's no evidence. Now all of a sudden come the 104-page complaint filled with evidence, filled with affidavits, filled with individuals who have no stake except honesty in any of this, they have nothing to gain politically from any of it, who were troubled immensely about what they saw. So now there is evidence. Now it's like a shifting goalpost continuously that can't ever be met. We can't just get to the point where I am, which is to say, look, this evidence exists. It's both anecdotal, and now it's in federal filings by an officer of the court who, would be penalized legally, would even put her bar or her law license on the line to misrepresent facts.
That's exactly it. She is doing that. I mean, right now, the challenge is they're trying to turn this around in lightning speed. And there's a lot of dangers with that, because there's always the error. There's the risk of error. There's the risk of moving too quickly. But there's also the risk of doing nothing. So you're kind of screwed
That's an intriguing question. So if you were sort of so they have a fairly, as I understand it, a fairly limited legal staff. Now Sydney's off the campaign legal team on her own legal initiatives.
Well, she was never on there, actually. There was never assigned anything. She was never a retainer. That never existed.
Right. So she was sort of likely volunteering her services.
Evidently, that's how it was. And it was strange, Michael, when they had her up there with that national press, no question. And it gave the presence of that. And there were suggestions to that end with the administration. Well, there was never a signed agreement or anything in particular that was she was not being paid for services. She was a volunteer. That's correct. And as this thing was coming together. Yep.
Well, I mean, so what I'm saying is that this is, you know, in a case that would have a fraction of the magnitude of importance, you would often see, mm-hmm. you know, an extraordinarily higher number of, you know, this is not even as big as O.J. Simpson's defense team, probably. And I guess that raises the question of timing versus accuracy, because, you know, one thing in support of accuracy and meticulous legal approach is we got one shot at this. And then that raises some really intriguing right. legal questions, which haven't mm-hmm. really gotten broad consideration of we know the process we're going through. We're going through state certifications. Then we go into the selection of electors who will cast ballots. Mm-hmm. And there's issues about that. How bound are they to the popular vote? And then there's the overall election affirmation within the Congress, and then the inauguration. But hypothetically, if you moved at a more calculated pace, which is to say you don't have this completely resolved by January 20, if it's resolved on April 20, my still best understanding, but a legitimate constitutional question, like something you should get like to John Turley or somebody who, you know, is right. has really looked at it, is I believe if this is established, if you get a court that even if it sends it back to the states and say reallocate your electoral college votes in light of these rulings, that Biden would leave and Trump will come back. But it's obviously it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something on my mind right now, but it's obviously an unprecedented scenario to my knowledge.
So what you're speaking about there is if the time ran out, Michael, right? And that if this thing kept moving forward. Yeah.
Strategically, are we operating against real or self-imposed deadlines?
Yeah. No, that's good. Let me ask you this. You make the reference point of the fact, the legal staff and the size and scope, and you had, from a public face out here, it would appear that there have been some missteps along the way. I mean, let's be honest and call it what it is. And then you say, well, the severity of this, they should have like the best of the best of the best of the best of the best. I mean, there's not too much at stake, just the country, Michael. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's all. Just the country. I mean, what the hell? Western civilization.
That's all. Just not much, Michael. Not much. I mean, come on. You know, it's just another Saturday night. And so then what happens then? So are we doing enough there? And because there's another piece to this with the president, you know, a lot of things people have always been in my ear saying is that the president, and this is always been said to me from military officials, the president plays 10-level chess, they say. And I always had that on the side of my mind. And then I would say, well, what's the president up to when he does the kind of things he does? Is he doing enough right now with the legal staff? We don't know all the going ons, obviously, on the inside of this thing, but you think he should have more experts, more people involved? Is your sense?
I don't think we want to look back on this. And here's my greatest concern is that these good attorneys, let's just take Giuliani and Sidney, both of whom have great history of legal career. We don't want to look back on this months or years from now and say, you know, they appeared to have had the evidence. They appeared to have everything they needed to demonstrate this. Yeah. If only they had had the operational and legal resources to nail down any one of a few components. Because let me just say, I mean, is it fair? I think you would agree with me on this, right? I mean, we're still dealing with a highly politicized federal judiciary in this country.
Oh, my golly,
There's almost no one who's come out of this process who didn't owe their appointment to somebody. And it seems like, you know, those appointed by Democrats are very loyal to that ideology and party. And those appointed by Republicans seem to be very inclined to demonstrate their intellectual independence from the party.
Not only is the entire legal system that way, Michael, but as Sidney pointed out at the top of the program, so are all of our agencies, which we have no confidence in whatsoever, the DOJ and the CIA and the FBI and all of them across the board. And she actually talked about that. Some of the politicization of that and what has taken place is beyond, because she goes back to this thing thing was well in place well before 2016, and they knew about it, and they could have done something about this, and they didn't do anything. Do you realize what that's going to be when all that comes out in the light of day, what that's going to say?
Why not? I think, you know, the election's over now, and when I look back and I reflect on my position over the last 4 years, I've been 100% loyal to this president because I've been wanting to be helpful both
to his
policy agenda
and
to his political success. And honestly, it's not mainstream media's business what I think of the internal challenges that any administration confronts. But how do you have allegations of that magnitude that go 4 years that are not addressed? You know, there's so many of these deficiencies that exist that we're constantly pointing the finger at the other side when we weren't in power the last 4 years.
Do me a favor. Let's come back to that. Hold on a minute now. Put that on ice, please, Michael, please. Okay, so I want to come back to what you just say there in the latter part of the show here. I want to have that conversation with you. But let me say here a minute here with you. Listen, you brought up a lot of good points. There are two narratives here, Michael. Before the election, which you rightfully pointed out, there were two different narratives, and there was the narrative that, and let's just think about this a moment here. You have the left saying, our elections never have any fraud, everything's cool. Now, why would they go, just think about this a minute, please.
Right.
Why
hell
would they go so out of their way, Michael, to try to convince to tell us, everything's cool in paradise here, what's the matter? We don't ever have any troubles with elections here. Really. Well, I mean, come on. And then there was Trump then, and then President Trump laid out this major, he told everybody the potential of fraud. Well, here's the thing. He laid out what I think back to that 10-level chess, Michael, which I haven't really spoke about or admitted, and you and I haven't really talked about this. But, you know, I have one of the senior people from the ground game and the American Mighty Strike Force on the program here up front hour. And it's fascinating. He's amazing. And he goes on to he gave me a line. He's going to be back on Voice of a Nation this next week. You and I'll talk to this guy. I want you to talk to him as well. Very interesting fella. And he's out there on the ground.
Is he doing the Nevada? The case? Is
Of that stuff out of the West Coast. Yeah. He has affidavits. He has information. He has spoken to real people in real world situations. Some of the horror stories he touches on in the limited time we had up front in the first hour was incredible. Mm-hmm. And when that comes out, when he comes back on for a longer conversation, he's going to do some ground reporting for us and some other things on America Out Loud and be available to us as a resource, which is very cool. And he's, you know what he said to me, Michael, listen to this. And this is a constitutionalist now. This is a guy who knows, I know this guy, as I know who he was back in the day. And he said to me this, and this is the message he sent me the other day. And he said, Malcolm, he said, with what I've seen, with what I've uncovered, with what I know has happened, I will never again look at elections the same way in our country again.
Yeah. Well, this is not the first time, obviously, that major elections have been called into question. There's been fraud. 1960 Nixon and JFK, a great example where Nixon, I know for a fact, believed on what he had seen that he won that election, and that Daley in Chicago altered votes in certain ways in Illinois that put JFK in the White House. And then in 2000, whatever side of that you were on, obviously it was came down to, you know, a legal judgment call that could have gone probably either way. It was well litigated by the Bush people. And by the way, that might be a lesson right there. One of the things long before Trump that we all acknowledged was how knowing a few people that were on the Bush legal team in that 2000 battle in Florida, they were top people. Now, Trump has a problem getting some of these major law firms to represent him because of the political culture. That's how bad it is. Yeah. That they have everyone. There's so much pressure exerted by the left that, you know, they'll literally put pressure on other clients of these firms and say, if you take on Trump, then, you know, we're leaving, which is a shame. But I do believe that is something that we don't want to look back on this and feel that we were outmanned.
I like what you say there. I love what you say a few minutes ago, what you just say right now. You really got me to think with that statement. Are we, you really did. Are we doing enough? Are we doing, in other words, and Sydney and I talked a little bit about that, but are we doing everything we can possibly do to turn this over? She feels she's all in to the point that there is no other alternative because she and a lot of other people, I mean, a lot of people believe we're gone. This, we don't come back from this if we don't fix this. It's that grave and it's that much of a problem. Obviously, it's a stolen election and it's a stolen. And you know, you notice, Michael, how eerily quiet the left is being. Let me say this to you.
And how aggressive they're being to people like me who are raising this question. Because if you had a lot of confidence, you would be celebrating and popping champagne. You wouldn't be attacking me over what seemed to be something.
Watch the body language. Watch what's going on, Michael. That's exactly it. And the president actually called that out and said he's tired of the way they're pushing Republicans around and how they're. He called them right out. He said, "Don't be intimidated." He came. You heard. I don't know if you've seen that story. He came right out and said, "Do not be intimidated."
They are being intimidated.
Of course,
and,
they are.
So we. This is the. You know, the Tea Party movement came into fruition and solved a lot of these issues, and then they pushed back. But ultimately, Trump has so many lessons to teach us and Republicans about the fact that you need strength, unity, commitment. And we've got a party that continues to be incredibly weak on a broad range of these issues. At the in all of these institutions, I was just thinking about this yesterday, just the billions of dollars that have flown into these institutions saying we will defend the Constitution or we're educating the people on the Constitution. Now we have quite possibly what you labeled an episode or two ago, a constitutional crisis that clearly is a crisis in the sense that, you know, if Biden is inaugurated on January 20 with evidence of the magnitude that I'm seeing already emerging just in two states, confidence in the system is going to be gone. The Constitution will, in fact, have been violated in a major and significant way that impacts all 330 million Americans. And I don't see these institutions or these prominent individuals who have been on the dole for their whole life saying they would fight these fights. They fought the real small fights, but now they got to take some incoming hits.
Yeah.
Who are the ones standing and delivering?
That's it, buddy.
Where are they? Silence.
Hard to come back from that.
I know one unnamed major institution that's been out front on the Constitution. I'm not going to call them out because there's too many to call out. Mm-hmm. The other day on Wednesday, and they had a big front page article on the meaning of Thanksgiving. Well, that's a nice article if we weren't in these circumstances. But in these circumstances, a rigged presidential election, evidence of which is, let's be clear on this, emerging as more persuasive, not less persuasive.
Yeah.
I think that's important. Like a lot of these things have momentum and you start to look at it because there's fatigue among people.
There is fatigue. There is. One other thing, Michael, the president.
But the people should be more, not less convinced of the merits of Donald Trump's allegations. I mean, you had these big allegations without the evidence. We were told the evidence would come. Now the evidence is coming.
Well, it is coming. That's exactly it. So what's been happening now from what I've gathered from, again, the strike force and all of that. So the president laid down a lot of ground game, Michael. So here's what's really interesting about it. So a couple, 3 months before the election, they were out knocking on lots of doors. You remember how the Trump campaign had a lot of ground game, but the other side did not? You remember we hear all those stories, right?
Well, stories, I will tell you that, you know, what the RNC say, they touched 150 million voters by door or phone.
Well, that's what Tim tells me. They really
were. I would like to see an independent audit of that.
Well, Tim is saying, I don't know what the number is. So let me not chop the tomato too thin here. But he is telling me they covered some massive ground, whatever that means. And so back to the 10-level chess. Now, hear me out. So President Trump has this American Mighty Strike Force in play. He has all these ground games, people out on the ground. This is before the election now. Now what they've done, here's what's kind of interesting to me. So while all the media has gone to the crowning of the new president-elect, and they've all been smug about all of this and play into the narrative of the storyline that's been put with this blockbuster film here, well, President Trump now has been gathering the evidence, which is what you say right there. He's been doing that. So the Strike Force tells me they have so much evidence and major evidence, not just a few affidavits. I mean, they have major evidence,
drinking from a fire hose is what Sidney said.
They also have evidence, Michael, that shows this. It shows that there were people in command and in positions that were told to go out and he explains it right up front of the first hour about how they went ahead and they thought they were talking. See, they played it real smart because when the strike force went out, they didn't say they were Republican or Democrat. They went out and said they were with the doing an election I forget the words he used, but an election roundup or an election status or something very, very vanilla, very blasé, just to get the information. Nothing partisan, nothing controversial. Nothing edgy. Just listen, we just really want to know the information because the information wasn't lining up with who voted from this house. Maybe you had like 10 people who gave votes from this house, but yet the guy says, well, I've been living here for 20 years and there's no 10 other people living at this house. And they got all these affidavits, but they also got master groups that were in place that were doing these fraudulent things by going and stealing massive amounts of ballots. I mean, he's got them on affidavit and he tells me that up front. So I think what's interesting to me, Trump has this whole ground game of the strike force in play. They're now on the ground, just like they were before the election, after the election, gathering evidence. So what you're hearing right now is the quiet before the storm. All of this evidence now is being brought together, as well as Sydney doing what she's doing, as you say, and understanding the ramifications, what's going on with Trump. What's going to happen now? All of these state legislatures have been, you know, no, because they're all political and they're all run by, you know, political operatives. But now what's going to happen is all that is a mission to get up to the Supreme Court, Michael. And the Supreme Court is going to have to rule on this. There's going to be a moment, a come to Jesus moment. It's going to have to be there. And we're going to be seeing something happen over the next week or two. You know that.
What a crucial moment. So, I mean, I've read both of the complaints in Michigan and in Georgia. They are immensely detailed. They are credible. Yep. And I think one of the reasons that they're not maybe being presented more credibly is the magnitude of the allegations are immense, meaning this is not at all like 2000 where we're alleging, you know, some minor technical glitches in one region of the country. Yeah. We are alleging just on the biggest picture item, and she alleges in her complaint, and I trust her to be representing this correctly, that there is evidence that these Dominion and Smartmatic systems were accessed and were manipulated for the purposes of Biden's benefit and Trump's defeat. I mean, so this is not a hypothetical now, even mm-hmm. though I had said, here's a question you ought to ponder. The one that I've raised is, can you find an example, because I'm still looking, where Dominion systems have been used anywhere in the world, including in the United States in the Chicago election, where Democrats called out the system, where they've been used without credible allegations of fraud. You know, so they clearly rigged elections in Venezuela through them. They clearly mm-hmm. rigged an election in Argentina that the Venezuelan dictatorship had a stake in wanting to rig and use this system. There's an ongoing criminal investigation and election tampering investigation in Philippines. Well, just about everywhere where they've been employed, they've been associated with manipulation. Isn't the burden of evidence, given that history, shift to one of at least being credible mm-hmm. to the probability that their use in the United States was not an aberration, but was in fact just another in a series of ongoing election manipulations?
Well, let me read this piece of the suit to you, Michael, and give me your thoughts on this. Listen to this from the actual suit that Sidney Powell he has filed here, and it's like this. The software used by the Dominion machines was accessed by agents of malicious actors such as China and Iran in order to monitor and manipulate elections, including the 2020 election. The allegation is based on
That's amazing. That's an earth-shattering statement.
It is earth-shattering.
A federal complaint, meaning China and Iran accessed and manipulated this election.
Michael,
indisputably.
She made a plea. Sidney Powell made a plea with me to anybody who's worked with the Dominion operational or the.
Yes, come forward, cooperate. There'll be rewards involved and all
she
kinds told, of benefits.
She made that plea right on the show here.
And
what's the other one, the other group, Smart Tech,
Smartmatic.
The Smartmatic. She made it to Smartmatic as well there. And let me finish saying this to you, what she says here. Now, beyond what I just read to you, which
Let me go further. I don't know if she said this, but let me just say, if you've been involved in those companies, you are now the subject of a criminal investigation in this country. You have one of two options. Your colleagues have already come forward and are cooperating. Both with the legal team and likely with the FBI and Department of Justice. They're being asked about who else is involved, and they're likely signaling you out now. Come out now and cooperate with the Trump legal team. Mm-hmm. A federal court, when they hear these cases, will look very favorably on sentencing for individuals who cooperate. They will look immensely harshly on those who dug in and tried to conceal their role.
She did exactly say that, and said that there will be people going to jail, Malcolm, from this. There will be people in prison for this. Believe me, she said, this is serious stuff, she says, what's taking place here. And again, and she lays it right out here, time out. She said, by using in the suit again, by using servers and employees connected with rogue actors and hostile foreign influences, combined with numerous easily discoverable leaked credentials, Dominion neglectfully allowed foreign adversaries to access the data and intentionally provided access to their infrastructure in order to monitor and manipulate our elections, including the most recent one here in 2020. Wow, wow.
And this is, and importantly, this is, you know, in the complaint, obviously this is an allegation, but then, you know, where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? Like Obama saying, or his famous saying, there's no evidence. The evidence includes independent evaluations and technical authorities who, you know, known for their expertise, who have said there's no doubt. There's absolutely not, hey, it's a good chance it was possibly accessed and manipulated, who have said indisputably that this has been accessed and manipulated by foreign actors with profound electoral impact. Now, and that raises present tense questions, Malcolm. For our side, okay, I don't have a full list of everywhere where Dominion was utilized, but statistically, the generally accepted number is 2,000 jurisdictions in this country used it. That's a lot. That's 2,000 people, 2,000 individual decisions to acquire this system. And it's 27 to 30 states, roughly. Right now, any individual who had played any role in acquiring this system as it, remember, in a climate where there were already bipartisan questions about foreign interference and the need for, you know, secure electoral systems, firstly, should be terminated. If they're not being terminated, then this is not rising to the magnitude that we're describing it with. We're individuals that were given trust by the public to go out, acquire, and implement sound election processes, and obviously had other things on their mind. They either didn't pay attention to the voluminous evidence that these systems have played historically in voter manipulation. That's possible. And then I think part of the allegation yet to be filed in court is that there were kickbacks involved. Mm-hmm. Not uncommon in fraudulent federal cases like this, where you have illogical, you know, indefensible positions. And I'm not seeing, you know, and then Dominion ducked their testimony in Harrisburg, as you likely saw. So, you know, initially they were asked to come testify. They ran away from that. Yeah. And now, of course, they're criticizing this, but, you know, you can't find these guys.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be immediate accountability for anyone who brushed up against this system. And maybe some of those individuals will cooperate.
It could be, could be. Listen, we're going to take a pause here as well. You're listening to Viewpoint Presents. And I want to talk next about also to Michael about the Republicans. I don't know if you see this report, but we'll get his take on it. They're likely to win the Pennsylvania election lawsuit. One of the judges had come out, and a very interesting conversation there. A lot more to happen with this election here. We're real world, real time information. We'll pause and rejoin you in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. We're joining you back here on Viewpoint Presents. Here is Malcolm again, along with Michael Johns here, and we're happy to be with you as always, my fellow Americans. And listen, we are bringing you real world information and time here, and both hours here of Viewpoint are impeccable as we try to really help you be informed. It really is about information here. Part of the challenge that we discussed up front of the program as well, how the media is shutting it all down and how they don't want to talk about any of this, clearly, because they seem to be on a one path to a communist country of some sort, whatever their thoughts are. But let me remind you as well, all of our shows here are always available on demand. Our podcast is amazing in it. It is fast growing now. We've got every week, we see more and more listeners, both on the talk radio side and the podcast side both, which is really cool and unusual for a program like ours that goes to podcast so quickly. 10 to 12, talk radio, Sunday morning, 6 to 8 later in the day, podcast just after 2 p.m., Eastern Time. It is the fastest growing news magazine in the country, and there's a reason why that is, and you're listening to it right now here with Michael and myself. And Michael, I mentioned the Pennsylvania deal on the other side of that poison. I want to get your take on this. And this Pennsylvania Commonwealth Judge Patricia McCullough, she made the assessment of this. She said that that Republicans will likely win this Pennsylvania election lawsuit. She said a group of Republican lawmakers and candidates who've been suing Pennsylvania, of course. And she said petitioners appear to have established a likelihood to succeed on the merits because petitioners have asserted the Constitution does not provide a mechanism for the legislature to allow for expansion of absentee voting without a constitutional amendment. Now, that's quite something.
Well, that's the 72 hours that the state secretary of state in Pennsylvania, with partisan designs, extended for the purposes of augmenting changes to incomplete ballot numbers. I think that's undeniably legally sound, but that doesn't get the 80,000 that the president, I think, is still short. What does, however, is the poll watching is indisputable. I don't even believe I've heard any Democrat attempt to counter or dispute the allegations in these complaints. So they have this Pennsylvania Convention Center. I've been in many times, Center City, Philadelphia, size of a typical convention center. I mean, huge. Row after row after row after row of tables, people involved in this vote counting process. And GOP and Trump poll watchers kept hundreds of yards away from actually being able to observe this. You can't see what they're actually writing, which is the purpose of the observation. Purpose isn't to say, hey, I was in there and yeah, there were people doing stuff. The purpose is to say, I was in there, I observed the processes and procedures that they utilized in these ballots, and I did not observe any fraud. They would not allow that. They had to get injunctionary relief and come back the next day, which they still were really not honoring. There were sizable six-figure numbers of ballots counted in the absence of poll watchers in Pennsylvania. And this is where I think the legal team has such a compelling point. It was the same practice and procedure that they put in place in all of these states, and they did it almost all simultaneously to the counting of the mail-in ballots. So if you look at the practice in Michigan, you look at the practice in Pennsylvania, you look at the practice in Georgia, you look at the practice in Wisconsin, let's just take those. They took the Democrat machine cities, right? So in Pennsylvania, it was predominantly Philadelphia, one of those politically corrupt cities in our country. As much as I love that city, it's true. And to a lesser extent, Pittsburgh, which is sort of the JV team of Pennsylvania political corruption. and then in Michigan, they used Detroit, another machine. And when I say machine run, I mean every aspect of these city governments are run. It's obviously the mayor, it's the city council, it's the election officials themselves, but it's also the sheriff's office and law enforcement. You know, so in the case in some of these cases, they literally had law enforcement telling the Republican and Trump observers to back away and not be involved. So these ballots, which were required under law to be witnessed independently, and a right that was afforded them, was indisputably denied them. You can't just throw those votes in and count them as Biden votes. And this was Detroit, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, impacting the Georgia. Boy, the case on Georgia is there's 10 different types of fraud that were implemented
that's
in Georgia.
Right. That's why she called it biblical, because it's massive.
You accept even one of those 10 cases, one of those 10 allegations, and this is going to Trump. And then in Milwaukee, close Wisconsin, and then in Phoenix, in Maricopa County in Phoenix.
So you
same tactic used, of corralling.
It's a concerted effort.
Clearly clearly, in my judgment, pre-thought out, calculating, communicated, a criminal conspiracy designed to implement one of multiple components of election fraud.
Okay.
Now this case gets shot down by the Third Circuit, which is, as bad as some of those circuits out west. It's very partisan, very liberal. And I'm not surprised to see the Trump team lose there. I didn't see much in the way of an you didn't even see really any explanation. They just like media themselves called a bait, said it's unsubstantiated or baseless. But this now has to go right to the Supreme Court, where these allegations are solid, documented, affidavits, video testimony, all kinds of evidence that shows they were robbed in this case.
Well, they got videos as well. Yeah. He was telling me that up front. Yeah. They got,
well, I'm not aware
of
anyone. I'm not aware of anyone who's come forward to contradict. I mean, like, literally, you could go get the Philadelphia Democrat, chairman, I don't think would dispute that they did this.
So
you've worded it this way. It's not just that they're robbing this election, but they're doing it in a glaringly obvious
broad daylight.
What are you going to do about it kind of way?
That's it.
Which is
that's
a challenge
it.
To any
Very
listener
smart.
Out there.
Very
what
smart.
Are you going to do about it? Get involved. Don't put up with this.
Get
don't
involved.
Do anything
get loud, brother. Get involved. Yeah. Get loud. Let me throw this quandary at you, my brother. And it's this here. So I've had a lot of people in my ears over the past couple of months, and certainly since November 3rd, for sure. And before November 3rd, too. So 2 months or so. Michael saying this to me. And I mean, some really interesting people and some people who know what they're talking about. And they would say to me, well, Malcolm, if this election is not... if it's not a legal election and it doesn't go the way that we know it's going to go, then our republic will cease to exist. So they would make these broad statements to me, Michael, like these really grandiose statements. And I would almost stop in my tracks. And I'm not a real extremist conspiracy kind of guy. I don't get into a lot of that stuff. And I well, our republic, and I'm thinking to myself here now, and I think, well, our republic is stronger than that, I would say to myself if somebody would tell me that. And I was hearing that a lot from some very important people telling me that it's grave right now if we don't get this done. And I'm thinking, okay, all right, I hear you. It's an election. It's important. And I get it. And then after the election, with all of that, it was still being said, my God, if we don't turn this around, oh, my God, if we don't do this, oh, my God, then, you know, we're done as a country. And people, they're writing about it on our platform. They're talking about it. And I'm thinking about this, Michael, and I'm thinking, and, you know, I've never really agreed so much to that point. But now that I know what I know, and I've seen what I've seen, and I've heard what I've heard, and I've talked to the people that have firsthand witnessed, like the guys I talked to, him and Sydney up front, both of these people are firsthand knowledge. You know what I mean? They're not secondhand, read it in the Times or the Wall Street Journal, Michael, okay? I mean, this is right. Firsthand knowledge. And it's now that I know with firsthand knowledge, what is real and what happened really happened. And this was the magnitude of that. It was a concerted conspiracy at the highest level to take down this election and to put another government in place. Michael, I have to say this to you and ask you this quandary now. So now I'm thinking, and I'm thinking this way. If this thing isn't fixed properly, Michael, I mean, whatever that means between now and, as I always reference, the end of January, specifically the 20th. But if this isn't handled properly, Michael, I think all bets are off. I don't think how we move forward now, Michael. How do we move forward? How?
I'm immensely concerned if Georgia goes completely south. Am I alone? Sometimes I feel very alone in these ideas, which just seem like common sense. Am I the only one suggesting, as I'm about to suggest, that if the Dominion systems are now part of of criminal allegations, that maybe we shouldn't use them January 5 in Georgia?
Well, that's a great point for the 5th of January. That is a hell of a point. But Sydney talked about that, and she made, for the record, said we need to get the elections off cyberland. They can't stay on the internet because there's too much risk.
But we're always complaining after the fact. What's being done? And I know the Georgia Republican Party very, very well, and I will engage again in asking these questions. But I'm shocked that the people responsible for them don't seem to think of them. Why is there not a proactive? Because it's not going to just be like, hey, we want these removed. You're going to have to go through some sort of petition process.
Listen, Kemp,
there's all sorts of questions about what Governor Kemp has been doing. I don't think I even understand that myself.
I agree. But a lot of that's going to have to come out, Michael. But let me say this to you. Right now, the priority is on the evidence and getting this thing handled. That's where the attention has to be at. But then you're right. We got to go fix the system. Everything has to be fixed. You're exactly right.
For January 5.
That's a hell of a point you bring up, buddy. That's a fantastic point. And they're worried about that.
Where Dominion was
utilized. They're worried about it. Yeah, they're worried about it. I'm hearing from people on the ground there now. In fact, I was the gentleman that I spoke about up front on the American Strike Force, the Mighty Strike Force, who will be back with us this coming week on the network, Michael. He actually is going into Georgia right now with this election, and will be on the ground there in Georgia. The Strike Force will, again, doing the same stuff they've been doing everywhere. It's pretty remarkable, isn't it now?
Well, a lot of people are going to be down there. I'm going to probably be down there.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot at stake, and there is a lot of demand for leadership. But doesn't that leadership start with, you know, when we're in the middle of making increasingly credible allegations of voter fraud, of not having the very systems at the heart of this utilized yet again in another election that everyone around the world, not even the United States, recognizes is critically important. So do you answer your question is, you know, yes, that's the worst case scenario. That means we lose the Senate. That's DC becomes a state. There's two Democrat senators. Puerto Rico becomes a state. There's likely two more. The courts get expanded, maybe dramatically, irreversibly progressive in our lifetimes in ways that you probably can't change. You get rid of the filibuster rule, which means all this progressive legislation sails through, not needing 60 votes as Trump is needed, but needing just 51. Sorry. But I do feel that, like, the greatness of America sometimes gets equated with the way our government works or what it does. It's not the government. It's the system of government in its ideal sense, which is obviously not what we're dealing with in a practical present tense reality, but it's ultimately the people. And that's where we've shown that these things can all be reversed. And I'll tell you one thing from my own perspective, never again in these cities are we not going to have structures put in place before these elections that increase the penalties and ensure access of poll watchers and make it impossible for systems associated with fraud to be put into place in roughly a third of the country. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I know Americans are outraged by it. My only question is the direction of your outrage is, you know, stop blaming the left and Democrats for lying, cheating, stealing, or making their arguments more persuasively than we make ours and getting away with things you think are bad for the country. Look at who is it on our side who has allowed these things to occur. So precisely at a moment where Malcolm and I have no agenda here except to tell you the truth about how we both see it independently, or saying that we view this as a defining moment for representative democracy and indeed something that could permanently be destructive to our system of government. Why are the people on our side in the Republican Party establishment, particularly in these election jurisdictions that adopted these systems, not being held immediately accountable, simultaneous to what we're doing legally? Set that aside. Their thing, we act as if we have no power. I mean, and I'm frustrated even on the commentary out today, continuing to call for this, you know, reclassification of social media under the FCC guidelines. Are you kidding me? We're 4 years into this stuff. The evidence is overwhelming. Let's be clear. The evidence is overwhelming. Yeah. And Trump had, by the FCC counsel's independent assessment, complete discretion to reclassify that. Now, for whatever reason, and I'm sure it's much more complicated than it sounds, they chose not to reclassify them. Okay, that's the decision. We had 4 years to do it. We didn't do it. Now you got to stop complaining about it. That's the world that we chose and the decisions that we chose. It's not their fault. In fact, if anything, they had their positions that they've taken have been reaffirmed by our lack of action, which seemed to suggest that they were not acting as a publisher. And those examples abound. They're all over the place. Right.
That's well said. Let me ask you, in regards to President Trump, is something important. What you were just discussing here about the ideals, I kind of like what we're saying here, Michael. The ideals of the United States government and we the people are the shine in the beacon of America. And I just wrote that down, Michael, while you were talking there as well earlier on, as that was kind of flooding out to me. The ideals of the U.S. government, which is really about the ideals, not necessarily broken government, meaning that is always, that's going to shine bright right there. That's the America we need to reach for and we need to stand tall for. And we can't relinquish that power ever. That's important to suggest that, Michael, right now. So here's what I ask you. Here's what's in my ears every day now, and I'm hearing from folks in regards to Donald Trump. Donald Trump represents we the people. He is a man of the people. He was elected for that purpose. Everybody knew he was not an establishment guy. They hated him. He was not part of the power brokers. That's been the problem from the get-go. So here's the question that I'm being asked quite a bit. They're saying to me, and I'd like your opinion on this, Michael, but since the beginning of the Trump term, that he didn't go far enough, quick enough, to really taking the plug out of that damn swamp. And then some people, you know, in letting it go, some people would say, well, but then they were calling him a dictator, but they were calling him a lot of things anyway. So the question is, should he have done more to reposition the power in Washington, even if you have to sometimes do things, and that's what's being questioned to me, that seemed less than stellar on the surface, but you have to do it in the best interest of liberty and we the people. Does that make any sense?
Makes total sense, Malcolm. And so it's going to be whether we're looking back on this administration, you know, over 4 years from now, or whether we're looking back on it in 2 months. My biggest takeaway is, what opportunities did we squander because of these deficiencies? You know, so it takes, when you take over, and Biden's going to show how this is done. You're not going to see these mistakes made under this guy, as bad as he is in so many ways. You're going to see cohesiveness and a complete commitment to fulfilling agenda items. You can't expect that a president as great, as persuasive and as strong of an individual as Donald Trump is, can come into place and then faced the media against him, Congress against him, academia against him, the deep state against him, and then appoint people in the administration, which should be your one strong suit to counteract all this opposition, with people who themselves are not believers in this. And the examples are boundless, you know, of major appointments that have been made over the last 4 years. Maybe they weren't all his decision. Maybe it was based on people he trusted who dropped the ball. As soon as I heard Reince Priebus, chief of staff, one of the first appointments that was made, my jaw dropped, because you couldn't think of somebody less interested in draining the swamp or less. Or, I mean, he was the one who lectured us after Romney lost. Yeah. Remember the famous post-election analysis that concluded Republicans had been too strong on border security that alienated Hispanic voters? I mean, this guy, for whatever he is, and maybe he's good on some political tactics, had no loyalty to the policy agenda and was a force throughout in trying to dilute it. Staffing was offloaded to him. And for the good 3 years of those 4 years, I think they've got a better control on it now. But nobody was really paying attention to the broad number of opponents were put into this. And just take Anonymous, all right? It's true that Anonymous was misrepresented as a senior administration official, but he was chief of staff to the Department of Homeland Security, who was tasked with building the wall and addressing the immigration crisis facing the country. How do you have somebody sitting at the right hand of the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security who is coming into work every day with one singular mission: undermine the president, stop his agenda, and expect that you're going to succeed?
Well, Michael, we are just coming to the end of the program, and what a heavy lift today. I mean, I think we covered some ground here, and I love where we end here with the ideals and the we the people, being the power, is the shine of the beacon of America. What you're saying to me, Michael, is we should never give up, right?
Never give up. No, in fact, thank God that we had Trump the last 4 years, and hopefully we have him for four more. All the issues that have emerged over the last 4 years will be just looked at as maybe a little bit of a learning curve and an administration learning curve that can easily be resolved. And I think it's already been resolved. I'm very encouraged by what the next 4 years is going to represent if he does get those 4 years. I'm immensely enthusiastic. But my biggest fear is that this evidence is emerging. The American people are going to come to understand it and see it as having merit. And if this stuff gets knocked down in a court, there's going to be an enormous hit taking to the credibility of our democracy.
Interesting. So perfectly said. And it really gives everybody, should, a jump in your step. Does me. I mean, I've loved the last couple of hours here, quite frankly, and I've learned a whole ton, but I feel, again, back to the ideals of America, it's a beautiful thing, people. And what Michael says there is, the lessons learned, in other words. Hindsight is always, a beautiful thing, of course. It doesn't do us any good, but we do have to learn from that and best practices put into play. And one of the things that we will put some more attention to, and Michael and I will for sure as well, is the draining of that swamp, the steps that President Trump should have taken for sure to ensure that. And when he says it's going to be an interesting, exciting couple of 4 years coming up here, that could be really something special when we talk about that curve, just getting around the curve there and getting onward with a beautiful future for our nation. Isn't that an interesting way to look at things in comparison to the sky is fallen and we're all doomed and gloom and we're going to just blow up or something? Now, there's something there, people. But I mean, it gives us an opportunity to fix the system once and for all in the way that it should be. And that is an American thing. It's a beautiful thing. And I want to thank you, as always, for being with me here on the mission here. We are on the front lines here doing everything we can for our great nation. We love this place called America. There is only one America in on this planet, and it is here, and it is the light of all that is, and we need to fight for that light, people, and help us do that, please. It's time to get involved and get loud.